I will now call our second case for today, 12AP336, State v. Bobby L. Tate. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Tate is Attorney Byron Lipstein from the Frank Remington Center, University of Wisconsin Law School, Madison. He has 25 minutes, and then we have 30 minutes for our attorney, Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Castle, representing the state of Wisconsin, and then, Mr. Lipstein, you get 5 minutes in rebuttal. You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. There is a bedrock fear that the framers of the Fourth Amendment had. That was a fear of magistrates issuing general warrants. The framers wanted magistrates operating within strict legal parameters. They did not believe that the mere existence of a judicial order, any judicial order, was sufficient to create talismanic authorization for whatever police wanted to do. Now, viewed in that context, it is striking that the state in this case is saying that there is no statutory authority necessary to confer on magistrates the power to issue warrants. The state apparently believes, in contradiction to what the framers would have wanted, that magistrates have free-floating authority, power to issue whatever warrants they want. That is, I submit, a vision of magisterial power undreamt of by the framers of our Constitution, who wanted magistrates operating within, not outside, the law. Numerous statutes already regulate the warrant process. State seems to say, we don't need any of those. Why do we have all these statutes regulating the warrant process? Magistrates don't need any statutory authorization. This is a judicial power grab that this court should resist.
But counsel, doesn't that argument rest on the proposition that you've set forward in your brief that the warrant issued here was not a warrant issued for evidence of a crime?
Well, I think there are two issues there, Your Honor. First, the state's position here is that there's no need for any statutory authorization for a judge to issue a warrant. Our position is that's incorrect. There needs to be statutory authorization.
But there would be statutory authorization to issue a warrant for evidence of a crime.
You're right, Your Honor. You're right about that. Under Wisconsin's general warrant issuing statute, you're correct. I misunderstood you.
But you take, as I understand the brief, you take the position that the cell phone here itself was not evidence of a crime having been committed. And so that is why I think that's what leads you to make the argument that you opened with, and that's on page 10 of your brief, quoting Justice Scalia in regard to the DNA testing for all arrests.
That's just about right, Your Honor. I would amend what you said just a little bit by saying that what is not evidence in this case is location. The documents in this case, the application, the affidavit, and the order itself, all they discuss is location. That is...
I agree, but given the facts of this case, where the one apprehended had just purchased the cell phone, wouldn't the fact of the location of the cell phone on the defendant's person be evidence that it was the person apprehended, Mr. Tate, who committed the offense?
The application, affidavit, and order sought location. They said, we want to find the physical location of this phone. And my point is that the location was not evidence of a crime, and that is unlike this court's decisions in Sveum and Brereton.
But if it's located on his person, and given the video surveillance at the time of the offense, given the general description of the assailant, the unusual or distinctive shirt. Wouldn't that information, the location of the cell phone, that turns out to be on the person of the one who just purchased it and the one who the video shows firing it at people, wouldn't that go to evidence of who committed the crime?
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is the possible theory that the phone itself is a piece of evidence. And I would just return to my...
I guess I would, like you said, I agree mainly, but I'm going to make one minor thing. And that is the phone itself, but in conjunction with the recency of its purchase, and of its purchase by someone who identified himself as Bobby.
Well, Your Honor, if the theory is that the phone is a piece of evidence, then that's what the documents need to say. I don't think it's a controversial proposition to say that the application, affidavit, order need to say, what is the evidence we're talking about here? And what they say is location. And in this case, location is not evidence of the crime. Unlike Sveum, unlike Brereton, where what was going on in those cases, police were attaching a tracking device to a vehicle in order to prove that the defendant's location was in a certain place, because in that location, the crime was being committed. That's not like this case. What's going on here is they want to find a person. What they essentially asked permission to do was, there's a crime that's been committed, we want to find someone, and we want to look anywhere. And what the order said is, go ahead, we understand you want to find a person, go ahead and look everywhere.
So do you find fault with the warrant here? Because unlike the last case, here there actually is a warrant. In the last case, there wasn't. But in this case, he's found in a private residence, unlike the last case where he was found on the open public highway. So Judge Wagner in this case found probable cause to believe that the physical location of the phone would reveal evidence. Evidence being the suspect, right?
Well, evidence, that being the point, we don't know what evidence they're talking about because they don't say.
Okay, so are you think this warrant is faulty and therefore there was no valid arrest, or do you think the warrant was okay, but it was the fact that he was found in a residence that made it bad? Give me your best argument.
Well, I think you're getting at two different issues there,
right,
Your Honor, so I'll try to clarify both of them.
So you're arguing both? The warrant's bad, and even if it's good, it's bad because he was found in the residence?
Well, I think the question of him being found in the residence goes to whether the Constitution applies at all. That's part of the analysis of whether there was a search.
Okay.
And the state's conceded in this case, in the briefs, that there was a search. So I don't think we really need to discuss that much today, although I would say that your comments in the previous case, the argument there about, well, why should it really make that much difference about where the person is found, that the search analysis maybe shouldn't really turn on that. I think those comments make good sense, and that's why I would refer to the language, this court's own language in Brereton, opinion by Justice Rogensack, saying that when there is government usurpation of private property, that's a search. And if the government using my private property, my cell phone that's in my pocket, to look for me, if that's not government usurpation of private property, I don't know what is. Now, returning to your initial question, though, Your Honor, yes, I think the application, affidavit, and order are defective here for the very simple proposition that they don't identify evidence of the crime. I don't think that's an exotic or novel proposition. That's the fundamental point of the particularity requirement, is that...
So does good faith play any role in this analysis?
Well, the state is arguing that the good faith exception applies. Now, of course, that you only get to that if you find that, first of all, it was a search, and second of all, that the warrant was defective. And I think you should find both of those things. The good faith exception, however, does not apply for the same simple reason that I gave earlier, which is that when the documents used sorry, obtain the order, don't identify evidence of a crime, that is a fundamental defect. Good faith can't apply to that situation. Good faith is for situations where everything is pretty much done right, but it turns out later on that there wasn't authority to do it. Here, I don't think you can say that everything was done right. It's a fundamental requirement that the documents identify evidence of the crime. And they didn't do that. All they did here is say, here's a crime that happened. We want location information. Location information, not evidence of the crime in this case. I don't think it's asking a lot to say that the specific evidence must be described in the documents. And the U.S. Supreme Court in Groh is very clear. That has to be stated on the face of the order.
In the last case, I looked at the document that was the document that went to Sprint for the request, the application to them. And at the base of that document, it's cited to 18 U.S.C., the United States Code, in other words, federal law. Does your argument have anything to do with federal law, or are there any federal implications?
There are, Your Honor. As you know, the application and affidavit and order in this case invoke federal statutes. And there is what I would call a bewilderingly complex argument that the government is relying on about how different statutes passed starting in 1986 all the way up to 2001 can somehow be cobbled together, even though none of them specifically addresses cell phone surveillance, which pretty important issue. That's why we're all here today. Very important issue. You'd expect that the legislature wanted to take it up. It would have done so directly. But the state is nonetheless arguing that this series of statutes passed over a period of 15 years on different subjects can be cobbled together to create authorization in this case. So in that sense, the argument does have a federal implication because the government here is trying to invoke federal law. And why do they need to invoke federal law? Well, they need to invoke it because, as I think it's four members of this court have noted in opinions over the last few years, the state legislature has just not addressed this issue. This court has repeatedly urged the legislature, take up the question. You heard Mr. O'Brien arguing for the state in the last case say, don't jump the gun on the legislature. I agree. You should not jump the gun on the legislature. There's no statutory authority for what was done here. This court should not fill that legislative void. It's too big and important an issue.
Well,
just to make sure I understand the argument, the argument runs, because law enforcement did not include in its application the fact that location of the cell phone is relevant to detecting a criminal activity which has occurred, because in this instance, the cell phone to be tracked had just been purchased by the one we suspect, law enforcement suspects, of having committed the crime. Now, if the application had said that, would you be here?
Well, let me try to put the point a different way, and maybe this will help you. I apologize that I'm not clear on this.
Exactly. What in your opinion would have been necessary for the warrant to have been valid?
I think, stated as simply as I can, if location is what you're looking for, location needs to be evidence of a crime. Like Sveem, like Brereton. In those cases, location is what they're looking for. And why are they looking for it? Because it's evidence of a crime. The defendant's sitting at a payphone stalking his ex-girlfriend. Locating him at that payphone, evidence of the crime. Brereton,
yes.
Defendant's committing a burglary at a location.
Because it's an element. I mean, call itself is an element of the stalking offense.
Because the defendant's location, in Sveem it happens to be the call, but in Brereton it's not a call. It's his vehicle located at the site of a burglary. There's nothing like that in this case. Tate's location is irrelevant. It has nothing to do with proving the criminal offense. They're not trying to locate him at the scene of a crime.
Tate's location, though, I mean, Do you disagree that Tate's location in proximity, or if it turns out that he possesses the gun, or if he, I'm sorry, if he possesses the cell phone that had just been purchased immediately prior to someone meeting his description who shot people, that would not be evidence that he committed the offense?
No, it would be, Your Honor. My point is, that's not what the documents say.
So what should it have said in order, in your view, to have been valid?
What you just said. The documents do not say that. They say, we want location information. They're not talking about the phone as a piece of evidence.
But, Counselor, I think paragraph L is a little bit different than what, and I'm looking at the affidavit that was in support of the order that was issued. Basically, it says in paragraph L, which is on page 2 of the affidavit, the affiant says that there's an unknown suspect intentionally shot a victim in the back of the head, causing the victim's death. This incident was captured on the stores at Mother's Food Magic cell phone. Based on surveillance video, the witness's description, affiant states, and he gives a description of the defendant. Video shows the suspect at the counter purchasing a cell phone along with this document, walking out the store, walking up to the victim who was standing next to a yellow car and shooting the victim in the head. So to know that this man had this cell phone at the moment of the shooting is all in the affidavit. So why isn't the cell phone evidence of the crime of homicide?
That's not what they were asking for, Your Honor. When they identify what the evidence they're looking to search, what they say is,
they want the location of the cell phone because they want to find it. And I thought what you said to Justice Gableman is that the cell phone isn't evidence of a crime. But I believe that if every statement in paragraph L is true, then the cell phone is in fact evidence of a crime because the perpetrator of the crime had the cell phone in his possession at the time the crime was committed. So I'm not quite understanding your answers to his question.
Well, I agree that they're describing circumstances involving the cell phone. I don't have any dispute with that. But what I'm saying is that an application and affidavit need to make clear what is the evidence that you're looking for here. And when these documents, if you look at them, when they get down to specifying what's the evidence, and that's what the particularity requirement says, you've got to have a specific description of what the evidence you're looking for. It's not enough to just generally talk about a cell phone in some other paragraph without specifying that's what you're looking for. There has to be a place where they say, the evidence we're looking for is this.
Why isn't sub A, are you finished? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yes, I am, please.
Why isn't sub A of that same affidavit, 3A rather than 3L, sufficient? In 3A, it says, in support of the request for the requested orders, I offer the following specific and articulable facts and circumstances to the court. 3A in part says that it would be useful in attempting to identify the physical location of a cellular wire device. And then, as Justice Rogensack pointed out, L talks about the evidentiary involvement of the cell phone.
I think that makes the point, Your Honor, that what they were asking for was location.
Location of the cell phone.
Yes, and the location of the cell phone is not evidence of the crime. The cell phone itself, if this document, like Justice Gableman was going through, were to set forth and describe, what we want is the cell phone. And the reason we think the cell phone is important is that it will be useful if we find it in this person's possession. It's an identifying piece of evidence showing who the perpetrator is. That's not what's going on here.
I don't want to say this is just semantics, because in our world of the rule of law, semantics is very important. Words are very important. But to follow up Justice Gableman's to follow up Justice Gableman's question, why isn't this, like, close enough? I mean, we want the location of the cell phone.
Am I going to get a period for rebuttal?
If you so desire, yeah.
All right.
Why isn't it close enough? We're looking for the location of the cell phone. Why is the cell phone important? Look at L. L will tell you why the cell phone is important. Someone purchased the cell phone wearing these clothes on video, outside, shoots, same clothes, walks out with a cell phone on outside video. What am I missing? And is it, you keep on saying, as you did in your brief, location is not evidence. But the application someplace also says that the location of the cell phone, I think, will lead to evidence. Am I maybe paraphrasing incorrectly?
No, I think you're right, Your Honor. And when you get down to the state identifying what evidence they're talking about, this is exactly what they say. In the affidavit at page 11, they say, there's probable cause to believe the physical location of the cellular telephone will reveal evidence of the crime.
That's right. That's exactly what I was referring to.
Well, typically the particularity requirement would make you say, what evidence are you talking about?
Well, the evidence that a crime was committed. A crime was committed by someone who purchased a cell phone and after purchasing a cell phone walked out with the cell phone and then shot someone, all on indoor and outdoor video.
But those are facts leading up to the... Those are background facts. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is particularity requirement says that you have to say, what is the evidence you're looking for? What are you trying to find? And when these documents get down to that, what they talk about is location information.
Okay, your turn for rebuttal.
Thank you. But I think what Justice Bradley is getting to is not so much the question of close enough. I mean, that's not what any of us are going for. I think the question that is on my mind and what I'm trying to get at is, you mentioned the founders, and the founders required no warrant shall issue except upon determination by a neutral and detached magistrate. And is it not enough that we trust our magistrates in the state to be able to read the entirety of the application and to make the reasonable inferences as opposed to what might be clear to an experienced judge who is often called upon, say in a one-judge county, to review applications for search warrant, or a commissioner who is often required to review the same? Can we not trust them to discern based on the facts that Justice Rogensack and then Justice Bradley read?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that as I began, the framers didn't think that the mere existence of some judicial authorization was enough.
They would read all of this, right? I mean, we presume, and there's no evidence to the contrary, that the issuing, the authorizing authority, read everything that both Justice Rogensack and Justice Bradley read to all of us. And so why couldn't a neutral and detached magistrate read that and infer, oh, they want to find the phone because the shooter had the phone?
Well, I think the simplest answer to that is that the U.S. Supreme Court's clear that the evidence you're searching for needs to be stated clearly on the face of the order. That's Groh versus Ramirez. It has to be stated clearly on the face of the order, and that isn't done here. When they get down to identifying what the evidence is, they just say, evidence of the crime.
So if they had added one more phrase, so to show that Mr. Tate was the shooter?
No, to specify, what evidence are you looking for? Sveum and Brereton, again, are helpful here. That in the documents in those cases, what the warrants stated was, we are looking for location. And the reason we're looking for location is that if we place this person at this location, That's evidence that he's committing the crime.
So that's a basis for the issuance of the warrant.
Right. In this case, they're saying we want his location, but not explaining why that's evidence of the crime. Instead, it's a general search.
But doesn't his order do that? I'm looking at page C-13 of your brief, and this was signed by the judge. And look at subsection 5. There's probable cause to believe that the physical location of the target cellular telephone, not the person, but the phone, will reveal evidence of the first-degree intentional homicide.
Doesn't say what the evidence is. The location.
What it is. Physical location of the target cellular phone.
The physical location of the telephone will reveal evidence.
Namely, and then, so what would they have added? That it will reveal evidence of the owner of the telephone, and that he will then be able to be tied up with the crime on the basis of the tapes. Is that what's missing here?
Your Honor, I see that my light is on. Can I answer?
Yes, you may. More your time flew quickly.
Thank you, yes. Your Honor. I think my basic answer to your question is yes. That when this gets down to telling you what is the evidence we're looking for, it doesn't tell you what the evidence is. They're talking about location information, but basically it's a general authorization to find this person.
Okay. Would that have been good enough then? Would you be here if this, the affidavit and the order said what I just said?
Well, there's still no statutory authorization.
Okay, that's what I thought you were going to say. So it wouldn't be good enough anyway. No matter what they did to fix it up, it's not good enough because you don't have a statute that covers this kind of phone location.
Yeah, I don't think it's a controversial proposition that judges need to have statutory authorization to do this kind of surveillance. It doesn't exist here.
Well, Sveum, I think it was Sveum, said, you don't need a statute. Fourth Amendment covers you. If you comply with the Fourth Amendment, it's good enough. Particularity and probable cause, good enough. That's what Sveum said. Last time I read it said that.
Can I respond to that, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I'm out of time. I don't read it that way.
Okay.
I think what it says is that the warrant in that case complies with statute. It doesn't say that...
It didn't comply with the warrant statute. The warrant statute says in 5 days or whatever it says, you got to bring a return. That warrant was much longer than 5 days. This warrant doesn't comply with the warrant statute. It was 90 days, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, what the majority opinion in Sveum does, though, it does not say that no statutory authority is necessary. And this court has never, no majority opinion has said that. What I read Sveum is saying is a much narrower thing, that the defendant there was challenging whether the document met the statutes, and the court is saying, we think it did. This court has not gone so far as to say judges don't need any statutory authorization, and I would be very surprised if the court did say that.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Attorney Jeffrey Castle, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin. So
Thank you.
We have a search here?
Thank you, Your Honor.
What's your name?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
The difference between this case and the previous case is that the cell phone tracking located Mr. Tate in an area outside of public view, and that's the difference. And I think there was a question that came up in the previous argument. Does it really matter if that's where we end up finding the person? And I think that is if you look at Knotts and Carroll, which were 1 year apart, the two beeper tracking cases, the Caro court said it was fine to proceed with the tracking along the public highway without a warrant as soon as it went inside the residence, that's when it became a Fourth Amendment event. That's when, that's why we have never contested that because the cell phone was located somewhere in an apartment building rather than in a public thoroughfare, that a warrant was needed.
Counsel, that seems to me in part to be an after-the-fact analysis. At times, we wrestle with issues like, do you need a search warrant? Well, you don't know then where you're going to find necessarily when you're, if it's a normal case, you know, for physical evidence. But when you're dealing with the use of cell phones and this technology, we don't know where that thing's going to end up. So do you need a warrant? Do you want to conduct a search? Is this warrant a lawful warrant? And you're saying, oh, all of those things, is this a search? Therefore, do you need a warrant? Does it meet the warrant requirements? All of that depends on where this person and the cell phone happens to be located once you've decided those threshold questions. Are they going to be at Walgreens? Are they going to be in a bedroom? Are they going to be on a sidewalk? Are they going to be in an automobile? And, oh, if they're in an automobile, then it was valid. If they're in a bedroom, not valid. Walgreens, I don't know. Sidewalk, I don't know. You know, so how can that ex post facto analysis drive the correct answer for the threshold questions?
Well, as I read Knotts and Caro, that is how the U.S. Supreme Court approached it.
With now, all due respect, I want to say this with lots of due respect. Does that make any sense analytically?
It means that the police are taking a risk that if they are tracking and they locate the person in a private area, that a court will say, same thing as the police were following someone on the streets, that's perfectly legal, and if they continue to follow a person into their house, can't do that. Now, that said, I think Mr. O'Brien said, the policy these days, certainly the Department of Justice, and I think probably statewide, is get a warrant unless there's exigent circumstances or something like that. So,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
As a practical matter, I think going forward, it's not going to be an issue. I think as courts become more familiar with the applications for warrants, it becomes easier. This is a case out of Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County has lots of experience issuing tracking warrants, more so than probably other counties where they don't see it as much. So back in 2009, it was a relatively simple matter, and I think with increased training, that's what, as a matter of reality, is a matter of, rather than whatever legal requirements.
Well, one, the court's not going to issue a warrant until a DA or police, law enforcement, asked for it. So the training has to be way before you get to the judge. Not that the judge shouldn't be trained too, it should be. But that's it. Now, I notice you don't rely on consent. The mother consented to enter this house. Suppose the mother hadn't consented. Could you use this warrant anyway to get into that house?
No. I think
you would have needed a search warrant.
Then you would have needed a search warrant to enter the house.
So what does this warrant give you?
This warrant eliminates any question about, you know, if this was a search because Mr. Tate was no longer visible from the street and no one knew which apartment he might be in. The warrant eliminates any question about was a warrant needed? Was it a Fourth Amendment event?
No, but what I'm trying to say is, Mom said, you come to the door. Please come to the door and say, is your son there? Or may I search the apartment? And the mother says, no, where's your warrant? So what does the law enforcement officer say?
law enforcement officer says, we'll be back.
We'll be back. Okay. So when, what does the warrant get you? The warrant just gets you to the apartment house? Is that it? So
yeah.
why if she consents, why do we care about all this other stuff?
Well,
why don't you just come in and say, mother consented to this search of the apartment? The end.
We could, but the issue, I mean, looking at this in the broader context of, there is controversy. Do you need a warrant to track people regardless of whether they're in public?
I understand that. But, you know, we try and resolve cases at the simplest level. So why don't we just say the mother, suppose the police had come to this apartment just as a general thing going through the neighborhood, has no search warrant, has no idea that kids in this area, and the mother says, be my guest. You'd be home free, right?
Absolutely.
So why aren't we just, you? Why isn't the state just saying, mother consented here, the end?
I'd be happy to take that position if I thought I could persuade a majority of the court.
Well, why can't you? That's what I'm asking you, Mr. Castle. Why can't you? Are you telling me that they can't go to the mother's apartment unless they had valid search warrant information to get to the apartment house? That's what I hear you telling me.
And,
that's what I want to
know. And that's why I'm following the Knotts-Caro distinction. You know, once it leaves...
Isn't it a bit more complex factually? My recollection, I could be wrong, but my recollection is that the tracking that was done pinpointed it to an apartment house where there were several dwellings and not to a particular dwelling or home, and that officers began to just go door to door asking for permission. So is that a little different from the cases you started to cite? Should that be a factor?
It potentially could. The initial argument in the Court of Appeals that the defendant made was this pinpointed his location in the building. And the record says, no, it was kind of a general area, maybe three or four apartments.
And I want to give you an opportunity to respond to your opposing counsel's argument in regard to the warrant, which it seems to me you do to an extent on pages 9 and 10 of your brief. And you talk about law enforcement officials will still be able to turn to cell phone providers to obtain location information, the court held, as long as such requests are accompanied by a warrant issued by a neutral magistrate and supported by probable cause. It seems to me your opposing counsel is taking the position that the warrant was defective because it did not describe with particularity what the police were seeking to investigate. I'm curious to hear your response.
I have two responses. One is, I think, for the very reasons that were discussed during Mr. Lichtenstein's argument, there was plenty of description. You know, we read the warrant application as a whole. We don't pick out paragraph L and it just says evidence of a homicide. We read it all together. But the second point I want to make is, I think a more, is the broader question of cell phone tracking just to locate an individual. Mr. Lichtenstein has taken the position, Mr. Tate, I should say, by Mr. Lichtenstein, that a warrant cannot issue just to locate a suspect. And I'll read from Spain in its description of probable cause in paragraph 22, quoting this court's decision in Henderson, which in turn quotes Warden B. Hayden. The officer seeking a warrant must demonstrate upon oath or affirmation probable cause to believe that the evidence sought will aid in a particular apprehension or conviction. The or conviction is the evidence of the crime. Aid in a particular apprehension is to locate a suspect. And we have...
Go ahead.
We have cases like Stiegald in the U.S. Supreme Court, Kuiper in this court, that say a search warrant not only can be used for the apprehension of a suspect, to find an apprehended suspect, it must be used in certain circumstances. So I think... it is, I won't say it's a distraction, because I think it's a particularly relevant point for this case, that the phone itself was evidence because it was purchased by the shooter. There was video surveillance showing the shooter purchasing this just minutes before the shooting. So there's easily probable cause that the phone itself is evidence in and of itself, and that finding the person.
Do you have a specific response to Mr. Lichtenstein, what I heard him say, and he can correct me if I'm wrong on rebuttal, that there is a requirement that such be spelled out in precise language, as opposed to the distinction that I heard him made in regard to a request for information regarding location?
I'm sorry, specific information about evidence?
Right.
I think it's enough when there is the application that lays out various things. There's been a homicide, and I think court can order, if there's probable cause to believe there might be evidence in a suspect's home, to search the suspect's home for evidence without laying out 27 items it might be.
And that goes back, and this is where I'll end my questioning, that goes back to your original observation that the reviewing magistrate is not limited to one particular section of the application, but the reviewing magistrate may consider all of it, and then when an appellate court reviews whether the issuing magistrate acted lawfully, we review the same thing.
Exactly.
Counselor, I want to talk a little bit about reasonable expectation of privacy, which, if there is none, pops this case out of Fourth Amendment considerations. And, what drew my attention in Jones, which was based on trespass, is Justice Sotomayor's statements that the technology which permits this kind of surveillance and finding of suspects also affects us as a society and what we anticipate is reasonable to protect as an expectation of privacy. You really didn't do much with that in your brief. You really just sort of popped out of it. But to me, that's the most interesting issue in the whole case.
It is, and certainly a very interesting issue. And I think, as a strategic matter, there are only so many issues
we can argue.
And I think given perhaps the way this came about, given that there is a warrant in the first place, that from the state's point of view, SPHM settled the issue whether there needed to be a specific statute. Even in Brereton, the dissenting opinion said, it's settled in Wisconsin that they are not can be non-statutory. You don't need a statute as long as it complies with the Fourth Amendment. A big part of my argument was to, support the warrant, that there didn't need to be, it doesn't matter whether these federal statutes apply or not. I think that's something that's a can of worms. We've got lower federal court decisions all over the place. There's really, I think the Court of Appeals, if you were to ask me how to write this decision.
I'll ask you.
I had you in mind, Your Honor. Is tried it exactly the way the Court of Appeals did. The Court of Appeals approached this by saying SPHM establishes we do not need a specific statute. So this entire discussion about the Stored Communication Act, the Penn Register statutes to apply, it doesn't matter. The issue is, was this a valid warrant? And the answer to that is yes. And the state also has the fallback position of good faith. The court in Spain said, that wasn't argued in this case, but it sure looks like
You don't fit Eason.
I think we do.
Eason. Eason, where the court required more than is required at the federal level for good faith.
Well, but the only added issue is there'd be a significant, I don't remember the exact term, a significant investigation. But that's got to be a case-specific examination. Here we have just immediately, you know, this is the whole thing from the, it was remarkable police work, from the shooting at 1:30 in the afternoon, excuse me, at 6:30 in the evening. The police were in the lobby of that building by 1 or 1:30 that evening. So I think you have a murder, somebody who has gunned down two people in the street for no apparent reason. It wasn't like you could say this was a domestic dispute. This guy didn't pose any further danger. However you point it, even in that case, there would be further danger. But in terms of how much investigation has to be made, I think you have to look at the specific facts of the case to determine what's enough investigation. And in this case, I don't know what more investigation would be needed. You've got it on film.
You earlier quoted language from Sveum, paragraph 22.
Yes.
The officer seeking a warrant must demonstrate upon oath or affirmation probable cause to believe that the evidence sought will aid in a particular apprehension or conviction for a particular offense. In the context of what we're looking at in this case, which is the cell phone, the use of the cell phone and the towers or GPS, doesn't relying on that language mean that in every case, if there is probable cause to believe that evidence will aid the location, will aid in the apprehension, that's okay, it's authorized? That seems, in applying the language from Sveum, which is a different fact situation, to the facts of this case, means it's seasoned. They can use this technology to aid in apprehension, and that's all they need to assert. It's probable cause. If we get the location information of the telephone, that'll help us find the culprit. That's true in every case.
And I think that's right. I think that is the implication of my argument.
And you cite Warden versus Hayden.
Yes. So I think certainly, now in this case there was no arrest warrant. There couldn't be an arrest warrant because all they knew was the guy's name might be Bobby. But yes, I agree.
I think that, for me, highlights the danger or potential danger of taking statements from different fact situations and then putting it into this 21st century of ever-advancing and hyper-technical scientific apparatus. And so where that language in Sveum may not have meant in every single case, folks, you can get one of these because you want to locate a defendant. Every single case. That seems pretty broad.
It is pretty broad.
You think that's good policy?
I think it's constitutional.
Okay.
I go back to U.S. versus Knox, where the court said, talking about the concern about dragnet surveillance, and the court said if such dragnet law enforcement practices as respondent envisions should eventually occur, there will be time enough then to determine whether different constitutional principles should be applicable. Insofar as respondent's complaint appears to be simply that scientific devices such as the beeper enable the police to be more effective in detecting crime, it simply has no constitutional foundation. We have never equated police efficiency with unconstitutionality, and we decline to do so now. So I understand.
It's breathtaking to me.
I understand as a policy issue the concern. Well, as a constitutional matter, though,
it still gets to, when you talk about constitutional issue, you're still talking about the reasonable expectation of privacy.
Right.
And the question for me is how these words dealing with different technology
right.
interface with the facts of this right. case.
And I think as established constitutional principles,
I'm not so sure. Let's look back at really what is the point. I'll start where Mr. Lichtenstein started. What is the point of the Fourth Amendment? What was the danger that the drafters had in mind, right? And it was that you couldn't have general warrants and just say, go out and search. You'll find something on someone, right? So you had to be particular. So in this case, suppose the warrant, instead of emphasizing we're looking for the cell phone, which I gather is your argument, and the cell phone has a connection with the crime, and we'll find the cell phone, we'll find the guy who owned it, who bought it, and then we can connect it all. Suppose this said, hey, we're trying to locate the guy who bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the cell phone. The cell phone was in a technique to apprehend the defendant. I'm going back to Justice Bradley's point and the Warden versus Hayden concept. And this was, what, 60 or 90 days?
It was,
60
I believe, 60,
days?
But
yeah, okay.
It's one of the two. Yeah.
So for 60 days, the police can find the location of this phone using the carrier, right?
Correct.
Justice Alito, in his concurring decision in Jones, said, hey, this is not your usual warrant. You know, for a few days, you get probable cause on day one, maybe 3, 4, 5 days afterwards, you can pick them up. This is 60 days of watching this guy and getting this information. And Alito said, hey, enough is enough. That's approaching the general warrant. We can't have that, right?
Yes, except, Justice, the premise of the Jones decision was that there was no warrant.
Well, I understand.
There was a warrant, but the government conceded that the warrant
was no good.
Was
it was
no
defective
good.
Warrant.
So he was
in one district and they weren't picking him up in another.
Right.
I understand.
So there the underlying concern that Justice Alito was talking about doing this without a warrant.
I know. But the same argument he made, the same, I think that the treatises refer to this as the mosaic argument,
mm-hmm.
right? You know what I'm talking
yes.
about. I read those articles. I'm not sure I agree with it, but it doesn't matter. This concept that instead of looking at each slice of what they did, you look at the totality of this as to what happened. And Alito says the totality of this is you got this guy for 60 days, right? And that comes close to the general warrant. So what you have here is the object is described only by a phone number. There is no location set forth in the warrant. The location is constantly moving with the person carrying it and then moving into private domain, the home. The duration is 60 days. It has smells of government is watching you all the time. The whole point of a warrant is to limit government and say, do it. Now, the real problem here is that it's good police work to catch people. So on the one hand, I think that's terrific. I mean, we don't want people who kill out on the street with the probability or possibility of hurting someone else, right?
Correct.
On the other hand, the Fourth Amendment is not designed to protect the criminal. It's designed to protect all the rest of us from government intrusion. And so sometimes by protecting all of us from government intrusion, we put handcuffs on law enforcement. And that's the policy here.
And I think the answer is, and I think that's the irony here, we have in the previous case, you've got to get a warrant. We have privacy advocates saying, got to get a warrant,
right.
got to get a warrant. well, the police got a warrant here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, is 60 days too much? Well, of course, Swain talks about severability. Here there was four hours.
Right.
But I find that the privacy concerns always focus on, we want judicial supervision mm-hmm. of what the police are doing mm-hmm. when they track someone.
Yeah.
That's what was done here. If I understand Mr. Lichtenstein's argument, he says you can't have judicial supervision just to track someone.
Counsel, I want to make sure that I can reconcile what you're saying here with the last case that was argued, because yeah. we'll be deciding them both. If he were, instead of found in a home, found in a public park for driving on the highway, would you have needed a warrant?
No.
So is that why you're saying the safest course, even though not required, the safest course is to get a warrant because you might find the evidence
right.
in the home?
You don't know. So certainly the safest course. And
would it make any difference if you just waited till he left his house and drove somewhere else again?
There's language in Caro that makes me nervous saying that, because Caro talks about it confirming that he's still in, the beeper is still in the house, but it's more than tracking it just to the house, it's confirming that it's still in. I suppose you can make an argument, yeah, if the police just tracked him to the place and waited outside, I'm a bit uncomfortable making that argument, but I think it can be made.
I have trouble on that. If you didn't need a warrant to keep him on the highway, to get him on the highway, so they get him on the highway close to the house, right?
Right.
So they don't need a warrant.
Right.
They're fine. Now they're close to the house, and let's make it simple. There's only one house, and there are five apartments in it. So they go, you can even have four houses, and they go to four houses. It doesn't matter to me. And they finally get to Mom's house, and Mom says, sure, consent to search. This would be, the state would still say this is okay, right?
Correct.
I mean, because there's consent.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter that you have a warrant to get them to the street.
Well, I think it gets tricky. Were you able to tell he was in Mom's house only through the cell phone tracking location, or did you locate him just in a 100-yard radius and start knocking door to door?
So let's take 100 yards. I don't care what you do. You got him within 3 blocks, and you can do a house-to-house in 3 blocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
can do it in 5 blocks.
Right. That's
the manpower. So you got him within that area, and you've got him on the street. Now you find Mom says okay. So you would say this was perfectly all right, right?
I would.
You would?
Yeah.
Sure. Because you got him on the highway, and now you've gotten him off the highway. You've done it by consent.
Correct.
So it doesn't matter that you had a warrant or not.
That would be the state's position.
That's the state's position, yeah. And consent cleans this all up.
Yes.
You seem to say that the Supreme Court put us in a box here about whether the person's in a home or whether the person's on a highway. Should this court try to get out of that box? Because it doesn't seem to make that much sense to me.
Well, and certainly, the New Jersey Supreme Court went the state constitutional route and said, we don't care. It's a Fourth Amendment event. I don't think there's been any...
No, it's a Fourth Amendment on the state.
Excuse me, a state constitutional equivalent.
Yeah, because they don't have guidance from the feds, so you do it novel.
But I think they also had a history in New Jersey of departing from the Fourth Amendment, which we don't have. The only in our state... Really, the Eason is, I think...
Oh, we have the other one with the bloody shirt.
Knapp.
But I suppose the argument has...
Couldn't we help the Supreme Court clarify the law?
I'm sorry?
Couldn't we just help the Supreme Court clarify the law?
Of course. I don't think there's nothing that... Well, there's clear. It's the matter of distinguishing the Knott's Carol situation, and the court certainly is free to do that. It can't adopt principles under the Fourth Amendment that are contrary. It can grant greater protections under the state constitution, though that has not been argued in this case. That there are,
the plaintiff argues it.
He doesn't
Mr.
argue.
Lichtenstein argues that.
He invokes the state constitution. I had not seen him, if I recall, give any argument, much less any analysis, why there should be any difference under the two constitutions. I see my time's up.
Could I ask one other question? This is somewhat frivolous, but which of these two cases is the more difficult, do you think?
I think this is the easy case.
You think this is the easy case?
This is
the why?
Because the police got a warrant. That's what...
Warrant cleans up all things.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lichtenstein, you've got 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Is this really the easier case?
Yeah, I think it's easy in my favor.
But you're not selling your colleagues from the Remington Center down the road, are we?
Wonderful lawyers, Your Honor.
Right. Just wanted to clear that up.
Any crime, anytime, anywhere. That's basically what the state has in mind for us. Police have probable cause of any offense and they want to find the person. Get broad-based cell phone surveillance, track them anywhere they are, long as they want to, without identifying evidence of crime.
What about Wisconsin statute 968.13, paren C and D, which say a search warrant may authorize the seizure of any of the following, anything other than documents which may constitute evidence of a crime. So here, if the cell phone is evidence of the crime because of it's being carried by the perpetrator, according to the video and according to what was said in the affidavit, why isn't that statute enough for the warrant that was issued here?
Well, a couple points, Your Honor. I mean, first of all, the state says you don't need a statute at all.
Well, I know what the state said. I'm asking you, though.
Well, I think the answer to that is that the any crime, anytime, anywhere regime doesn't need evidence at all. That statute is about evidence. The position we've heard from the state is that a warrant can be issued to find anyone.
Right. I understand their reading of the cases and their argument, but what I'm asking you, because you are saying the warrant's invalid because there's no statutory authority for it, and what I'm saying to you is why isn't 968.13(1)(c) sufficient?
Because location in this case is not evidence of a crime.
Okay, but we're talking about a cell phone here. We're talking about the cell phone being evidence of a crime because the person was carrying that cell phone at the time the crime was committed.
The documents request location information.
The documents also, which I read to you under subsection 3L, which I won't read again, talk about the cell phone.
The cell phone's a part of the case, but the documents don't identify the phone itself as the piece of evidence that is being sought or why that is evidence of the crime. What the documents request is location information.
You said that the phone is part of the case, but I think Justice Rogensack's point, and I think you would have to agree, is that the phone is part of the application for the search warrant.
Yeah, that's true.
And this discussion, this colloquy, reminds me when I was on the trial court when motions to quash warrants for failure of probable cause would come before me. And I would often resort to the bench book, the criminal bench book, which our marshal is kind enough to obtain for me, because it provides such a brief, succinct summary of how courts are to read and interpret search warrants. To issue a search warrant, a court or a neutral and detached magistrate needs a fair probability that evidence will be obtained. There must be sufficient facts to support an honest belief in a reasonable mind that a crime has been committed. I think it's clear we have that. Second, the idea of fair probability is a fluid concept based on common sense assessment of probabilities in particular factual situations. It is to be determined under practical considerations of everyday life on which reasonable and prudent persons act. A reasonable and prudent person reviewing this warrant application could not, in your view, believe that there was a fair probability that the location would lead to evidence of the crime, which is, in fact, the suspect himself.
Well, I think the particularity requirement does make it a necessity. The documents say what the evidence being sought is, and when it's just looking for the suspect, probable cause of a crime, want to find the suspect, that's not satisfying the particularity requirement, which is about not allowing general searches like that. That's the point of the particularity requirement. We don't want magistrates to say, a crime happened, police want to find someone, go ahead and look everywhere.
Is it really as broad as you're saying it is? You make it sound like anyone in this room could be the target of this particular warrant, but the target of this warrant is someone who murdered someone. And it's a suspect. It's a criminal that they are trying to apprehend. Not just the evidence against the criminal, but the criminal. And so it's really not anyone, anywhere, anytime. It's someone who commits a murder who has this particular piece of evidence, and a judge has decided that that evidence can be tracked down. Isn't that really what this warrant is about?
No, the state's position is not limited in that way. It would apply to any time there's probable cause of any crime and the police want to find someone, go ahead and look everywhere.
Police always want to find the person who committed the crime.
Right.
So if they can it through using a helicopter, or if they can do it through tracking a cell phone, or, I mean, helicopters weren't always around. People had to chase or had to get in a car. But now there are other things that police have to their... that not everyone does, but they do. This happens to be one more tool in that toolbox, isn't it?
Yeah, and I would sort of channel Justice Scalia in Maryland versus King on this point. I mean, the police rightly always want to find the suspect in a crime. That's their job. And the Fourth Amendment always gets in the way. That's the nature of the system. There's a trade-off between law enforcement interests and privacy interests. And it's not an easy trade-off in this situation. And the state would have you believe, well, it's constitutional anytime there's a crime to go look anywhere for the person who committed it.
They're looking at the person. In this particular instance, this person with this cell phone that just bought this cell phone walks out of the cell phone place and kills someone. So then they decide, okay, if we find the phone, we're going to find evidence, right? I mean, this isn't just anyone, anytime, anywhere, any phone, anyone in this room just track their phone. This phone was just purchased. This person is the owner of this phone, and this person just shot someone in the back of the head.
Yeah, but what I was getting at, and you heard Mr. Castle admit it quite candidly, is that the consequence of the state's position is that it's much, much, much broader than that. And so your decision in this case isn't just about the one crime that happened here. It's about all of us. Because if this can be done to one person, it can be done to 10, it can be done to 100, it can be done to 1,000, it can be done to 100,000.
If I understand your argument and the state's, in essence, these cases involve the use of a cell phone to locate a person for whom there's probable cause to believe that person committed a crime.
Yes.
And you say, can't use the cell phone to locate that person, even with a warrant, because the warrant is not authorized by any statute and becomes, especially if it's 60 days, too broad a general warrant. Have I misstated your position?
No, I think the state is incorrect that there's case law establishing that a warrant can issue when there's probable cause of a crime and the desire is to find a suspect.
You can find him through a cell phone he's carrying, whether he bought it yesterday, whether his girlfriend says he's carrying the cell phone and here's his number, or he's carrying the girlfriend's cell phone or anything else. This is a technique for finding him.
That's right, Your Honor.
You don't think it can be done?
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to thank both counsel, not only for presenting this case, but being able to respond to questions about the difference between the two cases, and for their excellent briefs and argument. That ends our 12:08 p.m.